Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of Life is No Coincidence, The Life and Afterlife Connection, and joining me today is my very special guest, Andrew Cohn, who has written many books. The focus of today's show will be his newest book, Evolutionary Enlightenment. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, I'm happy to be with you.
Andrew, I want to say how delighted I was to be at the book launch for your wonderfully detailed new book, Evolutionary Enlightenment. The launch was co-hosted by one of the lead actors in the TV show Law and Order that I actually watch, Linus Roche. And
yeah,
you watch it too?
Well, sometimes he sends me some of the shows, and I do. I don't usually watch it every week, but I watch sometimes he sends me some of the episodes to watch.
He's delightful as a person and as an actor, yes. And I observed at that time at the launch that you had a wonderful turnout of people, and I intuitively felt many people in the group displayed attributes of what you're talking about in your book, conscious, awakened, and conscientious, creative human beings that your new book suggests will be the qualities shared by evolving citizens. And in the future, humanity will discover, all of humanity, their innermost gift and connection to each other and the cosmos. That is my belief, and I believe it is yours, too. And that's what we're working towards.
That's what I'm working for, yeah.
Me, too. In your book, you suggest we all must question who we are, where we come from, and where we can return at any given moment if we only go within to access the deepest part of our soul being. Andrew, you may know Healing From Within is a radio show designed to encourage us all to ask these same challenging questions about the meaning and purpose of life and its origins, and to consciously become aware that the actions needed for the advancement and well-being of our society relies on personal choice and accepting responsibility for personal growth. So we'll begin questions about, I think our listeners would like to know something about you. Can you tell us something about your early life and the profound awakening you had at about 16 years of age?
Sure. I grew up I'm 55 now. I grew up in a secular, upper middle class Jewish home in Manhattan. And because of the secular context of my young life, there was no, you know, spiritual or religious education whatsoever. So my introduction to spirit or to the withinness of things occurred when I was 16 years old, and I was living in Rome with my mother at the time. And we were sitting up late one night having a conversation, and for no particular reason that I can remember, the doors of perception suddenly opened. And in a way that's very difficult to describe in words, I suddenly became aware of the whole universe, if such a thing makes any sense. I became aware that the whole universe was one living conscious being that was self-aware, and the ultimate nature of this being, which was the nature of everything that is, was a kind of impersonal, absolute love that it's impossible to describe it. The experience of the intensity of that kind of love was physically excruciating and physically overwhelming. I became aware in that moment that there's no such thing as death, and that all points in space are exactly the same place. In other words, I realized then that no matter where you go, you're always going to be in exactly the same place. And that was my kind of, that was my spiritual initiation, my introduction to spirit, and that was when I was 16 years old, and I really didn't know what to make of it, but I knew that those few moments were the most real moments that I'd ever lived up until that point.
Well, Andrew, let me tell you a little story that happened to me years ago. It was as if I heard a whisper from within me suggesting that I exist and I am, and I realized I was not dependent on this body, this time, this place, and I would continue to exist. And I actually realized we were eternal energy, and we were eternal, and we would continue beyond this life. And I remember as a little girl telling my mother that she didn't need to look at me when she entered a room. She needed to feel me and feel this essence, which was really the reality of me. And so this interest in understanding the duality of our mind or ego or physical reality and its relationship to my inner soul being sort of captured my attention, and I had to search to understand how to be in this state or place where there was no time and space and no divided self. So is that similar to what you experienced?
Well, what you're describing to me sounds like what's traditionally called the ground of being. The ground of being is the deepest dimension of the self. And it's also, I recognize and relate the ground of being to be synonymous with the primordial empty void out of which the entire creative process sprang forth in the Big Bang 14 billion years ago. In that initial experience of cosmic consciousness, it wasn't an experience of timelessness and formlessness and of being. It was an experience of absolute existence. It was absolute existence. It was almost like bearing witness or somehow seeing the creative process from within itself, rather than seeing matter and seeing rather than seeing the material nature of the creative process. I almost saw it from within its own self, from a perspective of energy and consciousness.
So, Andrew, is that what you describe about that time 14 billion years ago? Tell us what existed then and what was produced from that state of pure energy. Tell us about the beginning before it actually manifested physically.
Well, again, you know, this is when we speak about what existed before the universe began, we get into theoretical and metaphysical speculation. So, how I relate to this is that it's all possible for us to find access or to experience that deepest domain or dimension from which the creative process emerged. And the way we do that is we have to enter into very deep states of meditation, so deep that that thought disappears. Mm-hmm. And when thought disappears, the mind disappears. When mind disappears, the world disappears. When the mind disappears, our awareness of time disappears, and when time disappears, our awareness of the world disappears. So when mind, time, when mind, time, and world disappears, eventually our even awareness of physical form, our awareness of our own physical form disappears. When everything disappears, and this is the perennial discovery of all the greatest mystics throughout the ages, when everything disappears, we discover, the greatest mystics have discovered, that we still exist. So when there's no mind, when there's no memory, when there's no world, when there's no form, there's the perennial mystical discovery is that I still exist, but my deepest and most intimately felt sense of self that is formless, timeless.
So then we're in our energy or soul, our pure energy and soul being exists, and that's who we, a part of us.
I agree with you, but at that level, I think there's not. It's even prior to energy. It's prior to the creative process. So the way I understand how this all happened is that before the universe burst forth in the great flaring forth called the Big Bang, there was no thing whatsoever. There was primordial emptiness, and we realized that 14 billion or 13.7 billion years ago, there was a great flaring forth of light, energy, which became matter, which eventually created the conditions that made it possible for life to emerge, and with life, mind, and human culture. So how all that happened, or what catalyzed the perennial leap from nothing to something, or from being to becoming, is a great theological, metaphysical, and philosophical question that great, philosophers have been wrestling with for eternity. So to answer that question is we have to enter into the realm of metaphysical speculation. But the way I interpret it is that we existed, you know, you and I as one singularity existed for countless billions of eons of no time in a state of perfect beatitude and infinite stillness, and that it makes sense to me that after countless billions of eons of no time of beatitude and perfect stillness, there arose in our no mind an aspiration or a desire to do something, and the biggest thing that we could possibly do before anything existed would be to create a material universe. Because if you were the creator, if you were in the sense, if you were God, if you were that absolute singularity, if you were the creator, what would be the biggest thing you could possibly do? And the biggest thing you could possibly do would be to create a material universe. And I believe, and this is once again theological and metaphysical speculation, I believe that we, in our state of formlessness, chose to create the universe because we'd already been doing nothing for eternity, and therefore we were curious as to what it would be like to do something, and this is what we did. And now we are, in our highly evolved human conscious capacities for consciousness and cognition, are really awakening to and recognizing what we've done and who we really are.
Okay. Andrew, in your book, you coin a phrase, the evolutionary impulse, which you describe will take spiritual healing individually and also collectively forward into a new age of consciousness or understanding. Can you describe the evolutionary impulse?
The evolutionary impulse is the human experience of the energy and intelligence that created the universe. And one important way to recognize this is to see that the human species is the only life form that is compelled to innovate and give rise to that which is new. So the drive towards creativity, you know, the drive towards creativity, which is this uniquely human compulsion in all of life, is the human expression and experience of that same primordial energy and intelligence that gave rise to the creative process with the great flaring forth. So what we're relating here is the human drive towards creativity is one with and synonymous with and a higher expression of the initial drive towards you know, the emergence of energy, which gave rise to matter in the universe, which ultimately gave rise to life and mind. That whole progression of creative emergence, human beings experience in their own mind and bodies as the drive towards innovation and the creative process.
I see. So, Andrew, before when I was describing that experience that I had, I sort of felt like I was in a place of darkness and nothingness, which might be the beginning as you describe. And can you discuss that sense of knowingness that I felt? And does it equate to the concept of one and not two that you describe in your book?
Well, yes, it does. When you awaken to the deepest part of yourself, you discover or experience what the Buddha called is the unborn, the uncreated. So the deepest part of yourself and the deepest part of myself is unborn and uncreated, which means it has never entered the stream of time. So therefore, because it's never entered the stream of time, in that deepest part of yourself, there's no memory. And there is no fear, and there is no hurt, and there is no wound, and there is no trauma, because nothing ever happened yet. In the deepest part of yourself, the universe literally hasn't been created yet, so nothing has happened. And so when you and I awaken to the deepest part of ourselves that's never been born and never entered the stream of time, we experience an indescribable freedom and joy, because we experience a part of ourselves that is uncorrupted, because it is free and uncorrupted, because it has never been touched by anything that's ever happened in time. And that part of yourself, that deepest part of yourself and that deepest part of myself, is one. In other words, the deepest part of you and the deepest part of me and the deepest part of each and every one of us is one subject. It's only when we enter into the creative process and take form, you know, and take form and enter into incarnation, there's the appearance of difference. You know, there's the appearance of difference. But when we...
Well, I guess that comes in with the ego and the mind and the imaginary and the identification process and the fears that we develop in the physical world, which sort of go against this oneness theory and this safe place of beginning and of ending, as there is no death. So that's what we're talking about there, right? The ego and the mind, which is an allusion to the reality of our beginning and who we really are and our essence as eternal.
Well, I think that when we took that leap from nothing to something, or from being to becoming, we knew that we were going to forget who we were. And I think that if we have to look at this from the perspective of evolution, we realize that it's taken more or less about 13.7 to 14 billion years for us to begin to awaken, because it's only possible, at least as far as we know, it's only possible with a highly evolved human consciousness and human cognition it's only possible with human consciousness and human cognition to actually have the experience of awakening at the level of the kind of non-dual awakening that you're speaking about, and remembering who we are. So
it's happening. It's happening now. There are many of us who are now becoming aware and working hard to awaken and discuss these concepts. So obviously we have evolved to a level where we are ready now. And I want to ask you, you described the cosmic conscience, and some people might confuse consciousness with conscience. And please tell us why consciousness and acting conscientiously are both necessary in order to further the evolutionary impulse. What are our responsibilities now at this time in our evolutionary development?
Well, I think our sense of conscience or sense of responsibility, you know, all depends on how we see ourselves or who we think we are. So if we, you know, at early levels of human development, if we were members of a particular tribe, then our conscience or sense of responsibility would relate to everybody that shared our same blood group. So everybody who's part of our tribe was acceptable. Everybody who wasn't part of our tribe, you know, was the other. And then we
was the other, right?
And then with the birth of the great religious traditions, then everyone who shared the same creation story, creation myth, was part of our larger extended family. And people who had shared a different creation myth, or who didn't share our belief system, were part of the enemy. And then, and there's different versions of this. For example, with the birth of the great nation states, you know, individuals who are all from your country are all part of your brethren. If you're from a different country, then you have a different national identity, then they are the other. And then now we have the emergence of kind of a world-centric consciousness where there are a lot of people who are beginning to realize that first and foremost I'm a human being who's a member of the human family, who's a citizen of the planet Earth. And so my sense of responsibility is for all of the human family and for the Earth itself. And then there's one that's even higher than that. That's the one I'm speaking about, which is a sense of cosmic identity, which is where we identify with the creative process itself. I am not separate from and one with the energy and intelligence that created and is giving rise to and creating the universe in this moment. So then that's when we awaken to a cosmic sense of identity that includes a world-centric sense of identity, that includes a nationalistic sense of identity, that includes may include being a member of a particular religious group, a particular ethnic group, and our own personal life circumstances, all included in one.
And looking for unity. In your book, you write, reality as a whole, the seen and the unseen, the known and the unknown, all that ever was and could be, is made up of two dimensions. I think, as an intuitive healer and medium, I regularly float between these dimensions during deep meditation, and I actually feel very comfortable by connecting to the energy and information that exists in the cosmos or the universe, and I believe it's there to help all of humanity evolve and expand our intellectual, but more importantly, our soul capacity. So
what you're saying is very true, that when we have mystical insights, we see through the veil of separateness, and we see that who we really are is one with is one with and inseparable from the cosmic process as a whole. And when that happens, we experience a sense of great liberation and great freedom, because we actually begin to directly experience the non-dual or singular nature of ourselves with the process as a whole. And that liberates us from the fears and desires and endless self-concern of the ego, of a separate ego.
So, Andrew, tell us about the manifest and unmanifest dimensions and how they are part of a search for liberation and freedom. I think you just were touching on that. Can we go a step further with that? People want to be free, but what does it actually mean to be free?
What does it mean to be free? Well, I think that being free means knowing who we really are beyond the ego or the separate self. In other words, so many of us, our sense of self is kind of trapped, for so many of us, is trapped in our psychological identity. And our psychological identity or psychological sense of self is merely one layer or one sheath or one layer of who we are. There are many dimensions of the self, and the deeper dimensions of who we all are as individuals infinitely transcend the psychological self structure. So what we realize is that we've been identifying with only a partial dimension of who we are, and when we experience mystical and spiritual insight, we see that from the vantage point of a depth perception or of a much deeper part of ourselves. So from a much deeper part of ourselves, we see the ego, the psychological self, as the object out there, not as the subject, not as I. And that's when everything changes. That's when we identify with the oneness of the singularity of the absolute and non-dual nature of the deepest part of ourselves. And we're no longer identifying with the small, narrow world of the psychological self.
Absolutely. That's where we all will be at some time in the future, arriving at the same conclusion and the same oneness. But let me tell you a little story. At a meditation with international medium Robert Brown, I took part in a very deep experience, meditation experience, and we were asked to ask the universe a question. So at that time, I knew that many people were asking me what will happen in 2012. As I relaxed and traveled deep within myself, I felt myself to be an atom or a particle floating in an empty, dark space. And I knew it to be me or my soul essence or the part of the divine or beginning or oneness. And there was nothing else around me. And I was free of my identification process or ego or mind or physical being, but I still knew myself. Andrew, what do you think I might have been experiencing? Was I perhaps in that place that you described as the cosmos being aware of itself?
It sounds like that's exactly what you're experiencing.
So I think my answer to the question about what will happen in 2012 is that somehow there is going to be a major shift, and many people are going to become aware of the actual nature of who they are, and it's going to make many more conscious, creative people working together for that unity that you and I are talking about. I would hope that to be the direction that implied. But let me ask you something else. You also say in your book, now at the beginning of the 21st century, God needs our help. And I remember reading a book by a rabbi years ago, and he said, there is no Messiah, and I'm it, or there is no Messiah, and we're it. So does your thought run along those lines, that God needs our individual and personalized help?
Well, the way the creator, the energy and intelligence that created the universe, enters into this world is through the awakened heart and mind of highly evolved, enlightened human beings. So definitely. So from that point of view, the the evolutionary process, the creative process, especially when we look at it with, from a spiritual point of view, is desperately in need of us, because unless we awaken to the deeper non-relative, absolute, or non-dual dimensions of our own being, it's impossible for the deeper spiritual nature of reality, and in this case of the creative process, to know itself. You know, when we awaken to these deeper dimensions, when we human beings awaken to these deeper dimensions of reality, the creative process awakens to itself through us, because from an evolutionary point of view, you know, human hearts and minds are the hearts and minds of the creative process. It's only through the human hearts and minds that the process can awaken to itself. Without us, there would be no way for the energy and intelligence that created the universe to know itself. So yes, the future really depends on us, and we are the messiahs. We are our own saviors, and the sooner we realize that, the faster we're going to rise to the enormous challenge of what we need to do to create the world we all want to see.
Yes, I agree. We are each the bits and souls and pieces of the entire God source or universe or beginning, and we each have a responsibility to awaken that heart and connection to everything that exists and existed then and now, because it's the same wherever it is. Would you agree?
Yes, we have enormous responsibility to
yes.
do that.
Mm-hmm. I think so also. Andrew, you also stated that perfection can never be achieved in the manifest world. And I often tell my clients, there is only perfection in our soul essence and our eternal connection to where we came from and where we're going, but not in our physical life. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I agree with you 100%. And I think that the only place we can experience perfection is when we, as we, you and I have been discussing so far, when we awaken to the deepest dimension of ourself that's never been born and never entered the stream of time. So in that domain that the Buddha called the uncreated and the unborn, is where we experience perfection. And as we were saying, everything is perfect there because time has not yet begun. History doesn't exist, so nothing has happened. So before anything was created, you know, in this uncreated, domain or space or no place, everything is perfect because nothing ever happened yet. But once the creative process begins, once time begins and the creative process is on its way, we are in a perpetual creative process of becoming and reaching for. And you know, this is a developmental process that is giving rise to ever higher levels of complexity and creative potential. But there is no point of arrival. It's like being on a perpetual creative journey. So we could almost say that we left, you know, to look at this process through an anthropomorphic or human eyes. We could choose to interpret all this as with the understanding that we chose to left this uncreated state of perfection in order to strive to create perfection within all of manifestation. But it's a perfection we'll never be able to reach because we're always going to be in process and in progress and always in a state of reaching for and endeavoring to create the very perfection in form that we experience in formlessness.
Yes, we'll always be evolving. You know, Andrew, many of us know we're so much more than we appear to be, not just frail human beings, and that by going beyond the limits of our physical life, we can understand the powerful spiritual gifts that we possess towards this end that you and I are just discussing here. So let us go on to something that I talk about a lot with different guests in my many shows. In many of my shows, I have discussed the concept of home as a longing of our soul to know itself. You write, but for those of us who are awake to the evolutionary impulse, change becomes home. And the change you are referring to, can you describe that?
Well, from the perspective of the energy and intelligence that created the universe and is creating the universe, what we live for is change. We live for the emergence of that which is new or that which never existed before. And you can imagine if you were the creator, if you were God the creator or the energy and intelligence that created the universe, you wouldn't be attached to what already exists or what you had already created, but you would always be most interested in that which had not happened yet. And so from the perspective of that part of ourselves, what is compelling us is always the possible, what could be, not what already exists. And therefore, and so from that part of ourself is always free from and unattached to anything that already exists, and is always striving to give rise to what does not exist yet. So it's a different kind of experience of freedom. It's the experience of the evolutionary impulse itself.
So I think then that change is meant in a vertical ascending or alignment to the universal energy and forever creating and moving in that direction of new possibilities.
Exactly right.
Oh, good. Andrew, you described the tenets of evolutionary enlightenment in five ideas. And would you like to tell us those five ideas, or would you like me to read it?
Well, if you read them, I can explain them briefly.
Okay, good. The first one is clarity of intention.
Well, the clarity of intention is really the most important part of the spiritual path. And it says if you want to become a liberated an enlightened human being, then in order for that to actually occur, you have to want that to happen more than anything else.
It has to be your main energy and search and seeking.
Right.
Now, the second one, the power of volition.
The power of volition says that if you want to be a liberated, enlightened person, you have to take absolute and unconditional responsibility for the consequences of everything that's happened to you, which means you can no longer see yourself as being a victim of circumstance. Even if you were hurt, wounded, traumatized, or victimized, physically, emotionally, or psychologically, if you want to be a liberated person, you have to take responsibility for everything that's happened to you and not blame anyone else, seen or unseen, known and known and unknown, for the status of your current condition. It has to be your problem completely. You have to become an absolutely self-sufficient entity who accepts complete responsibility for themselves in the present
moment. Absolutely. And the third one, face everything and avoid nothing, means to say
facing everything, avoid nothing is the position of liberated awareness. And it says if you want to be a liberated and enlightened person, you have to face everything and avoid nothing in every moment, so you will no longer act out of ignorance and selfishness in ways that cause suffering to self and other.
Well, again, that means becoming conscious and conscientious at the same time. And
absolutely.
That's where all these tenets are going. The fourth one is the process perspective and cosmic the process perspective.
Well, the process perspective is one we've been speaking about quite a bit together on the call so far. And that's when we begin to see our experience of being human, our biological experience, our psychological experience, our cultural experience, or even our spiritual experience, all as being the products of a cosmic explosion, you know, of an evolutionary process that began 14 billion years ago.
From the beginning.
It gave rise to the conditions that made it possible for you and I to have the experience we're having right now. So we see the human experience, our own internal human experience, and everything that's happening around us as being the products of a process that we are one with and not separate from.
And very joyful to be part of, I would say. You and I would say that. We're very joyful and grateful to be part of that process. Andrew, I want to thank you for joining me today on Healing From Within. And for more information about Andrew Cohn and his newest book, Evolutionary Enlightenment, please go to his website, www.andrewcohn.org. In summarizing today's show, we have offered a view of how the universe was born and how it slowly evolved into matter and then into consciousness and culture and then into you and I, human beings with the power to self-reflect and the freedom to choose our destiny and to create a meaningful life experience. At this critical time in history, it is amazingly clear that we need to make new choices to help us grow in understanding our love for a physical life and soul life, and then accept the responsibility to create with our thoughts, actions, and choices the world of tomorrow for the children of today. In remembering who we are as universal beings born of the one energy of the cosmos, who can become both conscious and conscientious, it becomes clear that the only desire we must have is to develop our intelligence and world sense of unity. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and to learn more about energy healing, mediumship, and spiritual development, go to my website, www.cherylglick.com, and on the radio page of my website and on Web Talk Radio, you may hear leaders in the field of health, spirituality, science, religion, education, and the arts continue to offer their experiences and stories of transformation, always in the hope of creating more versatile and loving human and spiritual beings.